Good day once again, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Show Me the Way, a podcast presented by Spencer Fain, LLP. I'm your host, Dave Sider. And as you know already, we discuss business succession planning with an emphasis on mergers and acquisitions, how people get into business, how people get out of business, and how people continue on with their business roles. Today, this episode, we're going to be talking with Colonel Jeff Crooks, about his role as a business intermediary. I use the term Colonel Jeff because Jeff was in the military serving our country for many years. He brings a lot to the table in my experience. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Jeff is with Apex Business Advisors, and Jeff is one of those guys that I've found over the years that is very aggressive in helping people achieve their business goals, whether it be buying a business or selling the business. So with that, Jeff Crooks, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, your military career. One of the questions that I wanted to ask you, maybe we'll do this right now. Has your military career assisted you, helped you in how you deal with people, whether they're buying or exiting a business?
Absolutely. We deal with folks in all ages, but predominantly those folks have owned their business from anywhere from 5 to 50 plus years. Most of the business owners just want facts. They don't want fluff. They don't want sales. They want the direct information without any candy coating. Military specializes in that, as you can imagine. I retired after 37 years just recently, reserve side finally, and I've been selling companies for about 21 years. Probably the strongest thing the military brings is the directness and getting them to the finish line as fast as possible.
And you're affiliated with a business known as Apex Business Advisors.
That's correct.
Can you share a little bit about that company?
Apex has been around for 22 years. I've been there for 21 of those years. We handle Main Street to large privately held companies, typically $2 to $200 million in top line revenue. The firm will do anywhere from 60 or more transactions a year, some years over 100. We facilitate either on the buy or the sell side to take companies to market or facilitate transactions for buyers looking to make acquisitions and grow through acquisition.
So I've asked Jeff to come on board to talk about the experience specifically in his role as a business intermediary in helping people in this process. So we're going to be drilling down today, not really talking to anybody on the buy side or the sell side, unless Jeff has bought or sold a business that I'm not aware of, but really to get his kind of 30,000 foot and also boots on the ground analysis of what is really going on with buying or selling businesses. Let me start with this, because I always frankly enjoyed this question more than any other one. What kills or destroys the ability to close a deal? Is there any one thing that bounces up?
Oh, the big three: time, attorneys, and CPAs.
That's why I set them up, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, we love them all, but time is the biggest killer. Downtime on a deal, people lose focus. Confidentiality becomes a risk. If employees find out that a business is for sale, bad things can happen. If attorneys get bogged down in minutiae on contract details to the point where we can't get the deal done, the buyer and seller experience what we call deal fatigue, and they stop being focused on the goal of getting into that transaction. That happens more often than you might think.
So you are, you know, involved in a lot of deals. Have you kept any stats relative to how many deals close versus how many engagements you have, or is that really something you track?
We don't really track it in that respect, because especially on a sell side, you've got to find the right buyer. If it's a very niche business requiring a very specific buyer, that may take some time. Our engagements are a year long for a reason. Deals can die for any reason and no reason, and sometimes it's price, sometimes it's the niche they serve. If I've got a chain of restaurants that I'm trying to sell, not everybody's going to buy food-related business, retail especially. They take a while to find the right match. You can solicit strategic buyers if the deal is large enough, but if it's a smaller deal where it's, you know, maybe under a few million in sales and the owner's the head cook, chief bottle washer, and all rivers flow through him, it's going to be a difficult challenge to sell. Not impossible, just takes time.
You touched on a couple of the industries. What industries do you handle? Are there any industries you don't handle?
We'll handle just about any industry, but the toughest ones to sell in are retail and food. Mm. The big five, manufacturing, service, distribution, and food. I can handle any of the five. I've done deals, literally hundreds of deals in any of the five. But the two toughest ones, especially today, retail and food are the toughest ones to sell in.
So we talked a little bit about what kills deals. Let's talk about what are the attributes that make a deal go to conclusion and sale.
Communication is probably the biggest. A lot of buyers or sellers are afraid to use their advisors to help them solve problems they don't yet know they have. Taxes is a big one. Bringing the advisors in to solve tax issues before they become a deal breaker and address that up front is a pretty key task. C-Corp asset sales, as an example, is a hot mess for taxes. And if you don't plan for it, there's a multitude of things you can do to mitigate that. And I bring the people, I surround both sides of the table with the advisors that can answer those questions early so that they're not a problem at the end. More often than not, a CPA is quite efficient at his job, but his job is generally not transaction work. So asking your corporate CPA to do the tax planning for a business transaction that he may have done one or none in his entire 20-year career is often outside the scope of what his skill set is. So we like to augment them or supplement their staff with those persons, those experts, to make that solution more viable. Same with legal. Your business attorney probably has never done a transaction. And a transaction attorney is much like in the medical field, the difference between a OBGYN and a cancer doctor. They're both doctors, but they're totally different specialties.
So let's say I am wanting to sell my business and I come to you. What would be the key issues, or shall we say the key points that you'd want to get across to me up front as a seller before we start our engagement?
I want to know what you do well. I want to know what you can improve upon if you were to keep the business for another 20 years.
Huh, okay.
I would want to, well, that's why people buy. People buy businesses for what they can do with it.
Right.
And they need to understand that a buyer will pay for a business for the opportunity to achieve those things, but they have to see what that future of that business could be. I would want a third-party appraisal, if possible, by a disinterested party. I don't do appraisals on purpose, so that we all understand the range of value that that business is going to be at, and understand what kind of buyer you view is the best buyer for your business. It may be a strategic buyer, it may be a financial buyer, it may be private equity. We don't know till we do a little deeper dive. So there's some diligence that I need to do up front to better understand what your goal is.
So now I'm on the buy side. I'm coming to you. What are those same type of thoughts that you're going to express to me up front at the time you consider whether or not to take me on as one of your clients?
Well, buyer side clients are a little different than most buyers that come in. Most buyers that come to me, they say, Jeff, I want to buy a business. Good. What do you want to buy? Well, I want to buy a good one. Okay. Well, what does good mean to you? Oh, it cash flows X dollars. Well, that's fine. But what industry? Oh, I don't care as long as it cash flows X dollars. That's a hard guy to help. Okay. A buy side guy is going to say he's about one in 20 buyers. He's going to say, I want a buyer in this industry, in this geographic area that has a minimum cash flow of X, has a total number of employees of X, and is providing these services. And I want to close on that in a finite time period of, say, 90 to 180 days. That guy is a buy-side guy every single time. And he may not know it yet, but he is often with a private equity group looking to grow and add a primary platform company or a tuck-in for a platform company. It may be an individual who's been looking for a long time and comes in late on deals. It's not uncommon for us to have five or six offers on a sell-side engagement. And a buyer comes into that fray, he's forced to pay the most for the company if he wants to have a shot at that company. On the buy side, our fiduciary obligation is to the buyer, not the seller. So we don't educate the seller like we do on the sell side. And if we find a deal, it is always going to be on the buy side. So a lot of buyers are a little bit fee shy because they don't like retainers. They don't understand how that's actually to their benefit. And they don't understand that my job, my role in a buy side search is to find them targets of opportunity. And anything I find, they're incumbent to me for a fee if they buy it. And anything they don't, if they choose not to pull the trigger, the worst they're out is my retainer. So from a cost perspective, when you're doing due diligence on a company and you're dropping $5,000 or $10,000 or $50,000 in due diligence on the wrong company, the buy side starts looking a whole lot more attractive.
Very good.
It is the most efficient way to find a company to buy.
Let's find a way to talk about the fun things that happen. And by that, I mean, have there been any unexpected, unanticipated surprises in your representation? I'm not saying like maybe somebody found an alligator in the toilet, so to speak, but what is there something that comes to mind that you can share?
Well, business owners are not in business to pay taxes.
Right.
So they get a little bit creative sometimes with their discretionary expenses and what they run through their company. I have found cats and dogs and turtles on payroll. I had a 2-year-old as the executive vice president of the company with a house at the lake and a cigarette boat and a $250,000 salary. And I tell the clients, I say, I'm not the IRS. My MBA says I suck at accounting. It's not my superpower. But if I can find this, you're taking some risk. So be judicious about what you run through the company as an expense. The cleaner the books, the easier it is to sell the company. If there's some crazy ad backs, just be cognizant that a buyer is probably going to question that. And if you're using conventional lending or SBA lending, they're probably not going to allow it. They call those lifestyle ad backs in the banking world. On the rare occasion you get a cash buyer, they may be a little have a better appetite for it, but banks generally say if it's not on the tax return, it hasn't been expensed, we can't add it back.
Got it. Let me deviate a little bit. Tell us in a little depth about your military career. Let people know a little bit about Jeff Crooks.
Sure. I enlisted on the enlisted side as a private E1 in 1984 and went up through staff sergeant after trips to both Fort Ord, California and Germany. Did a couple deployments to Macedonia and Bosnian theaters. Rounded out my last 10 years, I was an instructor at the Command and General Staff College here in Leavenworth and did my last 12 months at Fort Leonard Wood in their leadership department for the engineer school. I probably missed the enlisted side the most because I got to play with stuff and blow it up. And once you become a senior officer, they are, sorry, you just stand over there and look pretty. I don't want you touching anything or blowing anything up. So I will miss the military service. I don't know how much I'll miss the politics of it, but that's just part of the game.
How do you find sellers, or the reverse, how do sellers find you typically?
We go through our website, kcapex.com. We also advertise, I think, on 9 or 10 other websites that, you know, spider out in a variety of locations for our listings, our sell side engagements. And a lot of our sell side engagements, we often get the buyers like, well, I don't want that. I want this. And we talk to them about the buy side search. They end up becoming buy side clients as a result of that. And I'm also referred to a lot. Now, having done this a while, a lot of folks know what I do and where to find me. And they'll get a call from you and folks like yourself that say, I've got a client that needs to find a business to acquire. What do you got? So they may become a buy-side client, or they may just look at our inventory, what we currently have.
You've been doing this, you said, 21 years?
21 years.
Mm-hmm. So from the time you started until now, what's changed, or has there been some kind of an evolution? Is what you do in the business different than what you did 21 years ago when you started out?
Well, we'd like to think we're getting better on recognizing the problems further ahead than, oh my God, tomorrow, which happened probably early in this adventure. I would say the process is generally the same, but the solutions are getting better, specifically on the tax side, creative ways to structure deals to make both parties happy, to make sure that the employees that are leaving or staying with the company are sticky and that they make it through the transition. Boomers are retiring at record rates, as you know.
Yep.
They are our primary customer right now. And I don't anticipate that to slow down for another 10 years or so.
Well, I think I read something that said there's some trillions and trillions of dollars will be changing hands.
Absolutely.
In the next 30 years. So
yep.
How much longer do you think you're going to do this?
Oh, I don't know. I'd be bored. I retired from the military. I think I'll work till I just, I may take more vacations, but I don't know how long I'll do it. I may continue to do it. I don't know.
Have you seen, for business intermediary, has your industry changed, evolved over that time period? Is it a little different?
There are more expectations on us to handle the minutiae, bring the players into the table. As you know, we don't practice accounting, we don't practice law, but when it comes to our swim lane, we are expected to know who to call to solve whatever the problem might be. Many intermediaries in our industry are very hands-off, and you know, they figure their fee is earned once they've made an introduction, but they do nothing to help the facilitate the deal to close, and the buyer and seller simply don't know who to ask to solve those problems. So they look to us to make sure that gets done.
Have you seen over the years an increase in the type of financing or a different type of financing used in acquisitions? How have you seen that from your vantage point?
Well, $5 million or less is SBA's world, and there's tough to beat the lending. Cash flow lending is king on the SBA side. And then there, it goes higher if there's real estate involved. And the interest rates are attractive, and it's cheap money comparatively. Conventional lending is usually a 30% down payment versus a 10% down payment. Conventional lending wants 100% collateralization with hard assets. SBA provides a 75% loan guarantee. That's a significant impact on business sales. There's that gap between 5 and 10 million that private equity generally isn't interested in because it's not a large enough deal. So companies that are selling that in that neutral zone either have to find outside financing, they have to carry more of the transaction, or they have to find themselves to be a tuck-in for a larger platform company where they can find financing through private equity. And once it gets north of 10 million in transaction value, there's fairly limitless sources of funding, and all the PEG groups are trying to deploy their cash like anybody else is.
What has been the quickest turnaround on the sale of a business that you either
put it under contract or to close on it?
Close.
Say, my record for putting it under contract is 20 minutes.
Whoa.
Yeah. Fluke of circumstance and timing. Probably in a perfect world with a cash buyer, 30 to 45 days. Realistically, if we put a deal into contract in the first week that it's on the market, which is not uncommon, typically 90 days to close it is most common. Sellers need to understand that just because they're at the closing table, that's when the transition begins, which may be 3 months, 6 months, a year, or longer, depending on what the seller wants and what role they take post-transaction.
What's been the longest time between engagement and close, if you can recall?
Oh, I've had 5 years in some cases where it's cyclical in nature. I've got a retail gun shop right now as an example, and it goes up and down with a political ebb and flow. And buyers that are in that space or owners that are in that space understand that. People that are not in that space don't understand that. And that's a hard thing for people to get their head around. They want something with steady Eddie cash flow, steady growth. And as they go in and out of administrations, that cash flow can go from $1 million in net income to a year to $7 million in net income in a year. And then drop right back down after the political tides change.
What is your reach either for sellers or buyers? Is it the Midwest, the entire country, the world?
I will do deals anywhere in the United States. The toughest place for us as an advisor to do deals in are New York and California. They are not terribly advisor friendly, but I've done deals in 37 states in 21 years.
Okay.
I'm doing a buy-side search right now. We're looking in 9 different states for the target for this particular client. It's in the 10 to 50 million revenue range.
This is a little bit of a similar question that I've asked before, but I want to drill down a little bit. From your real world experience, can you by percentage even begin to outline what is the highest or the most likely reason a deal won't close?
Well, time's probably the biggest enemy.
Okay.
If we're not getting documentation from a seller or a buyer, the bank freezes. If the buyer and seller are fee shy, then the attorneys freeze. If there's no solution to a tax problem and no one's stepping up to give options, the accountants freeze. So, you know, really, you have knowledge is and time are the enemies. You've got to get the solution, and they need to realize if you're the seller or the buyer that you may be solving the other party's problem to get the deal closed. It's not uncommon on a buy side that we solve a seller's tax problem so that the buyer can buy the business at a reasonable price, because the tax problem is not the buyer's problem. But we have to solve that problem for the seller to get the deal done.
How many, just ballpark, how many engagements do you have under contract in general? I don't think people have an idea of, you know, how many people somebody at any one time works with.
I think we have engagements as a firm. I bet we've probably got 100-ish listings. Mm. And I bet we've probably got 40 of them under contract right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we've moved to two pages when we review the works in progress. And those are closing anytime in the next week to the next 6 months.
What do you see professionally and personally in your immediate future for yourself?
You know, with the retirement from the military, I'd like to think I'm going to have more time for the kids. And my youngest is my last one in school, and she's playing softball, travel ball. You know, the other two are working or in college. So I'd like to think there's some time for more deals and maybe a little more time for family. Professionally, doing what I do has been working for me for a while, and you know, we can add other services, but really it's kind of the focus of what I do. I enjoy it. I enjoy the chase. I enjoy the close. It's all fun.
Well, Jeff, I really appreciate you joining us.
Absolutely.
Tell the listeners again how to reach you. First, Jeff, and then Apex.
Yeah, my email is thelettersjcrooks@kcapex.com. The website would be, of course, kcapex.com. And you can call the office or myself. 913-433-2305 would be my direct line.
So I want to thank Jeff again for spending time with us. And with that information, you should know how to now to get a hold of Jeff and avail yourself of his services. Thank you, Jeff. And if you're in search of assistance with any merger, acquisition, buying, or selling businesses, go to davesider.com and schedule a free consultation. Also, please be sure to subscribe to our show. Please rate it and leave me a comment on your favorite podcast platforms such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Thanks to all. I look forward to once again joining you in our future podcasts. Jeff, again, thank you very much for your time today.
Absolutely.
As required by the state of Missouri, I'm admonished to tell you this broadcast and podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in this podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. In determining the best course of action, please, as a business owner or someone interested in buying a business, please consult with an attorney on your specific distinct circumstances.